Talk Shoe. Recorded live.
It's almost time, kids. The clock is ticking. Be in front of your TV sets for the horror-thon. And remember the big giveaway at 9. Don't miss it. And don't forget to wear your masks. The clock is ticking. It's almost time.
Happy, happy Halloween.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone.
Marilyn, what are you looking at, dear? You. Picture of you before.
Oh, dear.
That is you, isn't it?
Yes, that's me, before my transformation. I was a sight, wasn't I?
Mother, I think you were beautiful.
Well, I certainly don't.
Am I very homely now?
No, darling. Not to me. But afterwards, you'll be beautiful.
Mother, if I didn't want the transformation, I wouldn't have to have it, would I?
Darling, what are you talking about? The transformation is the most marvelous thing that could happen to a person.
Well, I could wait a little while, couldn't I?
Don't worry, darling. You're just nervous.
What you need is a glass of instant smile.
Doing?
Getting ready for today's show.
Isn't today's guest Richard Long?
Yes.
Then why are you playing the Big Valley music?
Because he was on that show.
Are you doing the Big Valley show?
No, we're doing number 12 Looks Just Like You today.
Then play the right music.
Living alone, I think of all the friends I've known. When I dial the telephone, nobody's home.
Take it easy with that Uncle Rick stuff, will you? What are you trying to do, make me feel old?
Oh, I'm sorry. I forgot.
Now, young lady. What's all this I've been hearing about you? You know, honey, your mother is very worried.
I don't want to be transformed. I want to stay ugly.
Oh, you're not ugly. You're just...
not beautiful.
Well, I wouldn't exactly say that. It's just that, you're different. Sit down here. Marilyn, your father was transformed.
Yes, number 17, just like you.
A very popular number these days. As a matter of fact, it has been for 20 years. Honey, he wouldn't have settled for anything less.
Yes, but is that good? Being like everybody? I mean, isn't that the same as being nobody?
I woke up Hiya, Bobby.
Hi, Ken.
You want to go for a ride?
Sure, Ken.
Jump in.
I'm a Barbie girl in the Barbie world. Life in plastic, it's fantastic. You can brush my hair, undress me everywhere. Imagination, life is your creation.
Come on, Barbie, let's go party.
They charge the finest scientific minds with the task of eliminating ugliness in mankind.
But I'm not ugly. I'm not pretty, but I'm not ugly.
But to others, you are.
Not to people who love me.
There is more to it than that, of course. As we learn to reshape the features, remold the body, we also learn to eliminate most of the causes of illness. As us to prolong life. Before the transformation, you could have expected to live 70, 80, perhaps 90 years. But now you can live twice that long, perhaps three times. This is a good thing, is it not?
Yes.
Your mother. Ah, she's lovely, is she not? At one time, her body, her face might already be showing signs of age, of decay. You would not deny your mother her youth, would you?
But you could do that anyway, couldn't you? Keep me young without changing me? I wouldn't mind just that.
But someday you might. And that would be too late. You see, the transformation must be performed when the body and the tissue are at the proper state.
No. I'll never change my mind. I've thought about it and I know I never will.
Slowly passed, and I found myself alone, surrounded by strangers I thought were my friends. I found myself further and further from my home, and I guess I lost my way. There were oh so many roads. I was living to run and running to live, never worried about how much I owe. Moving 8 miles a minute for months at a time, breaking all of the rules that would bend. I began to find myself searching, searching for shelter again and again. Against the wind, little something against the wind. Seeking shelter against the wind.
You open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination, and you're invited along. We'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Yes, indeed. Good afternoon, everyone. This is Talking Twilight Zone. I'm your host, Lynn, and I am here with my wonderful co-host, Dave, Robert, and Bobby. Hi, guys.
Hi, Lynn.
Howdy.
Outstanding ovation, indeed. How's everybody doing?
Okay.
Fine.
Good. Ah, oh, you're all and doing great.
And happy Halloween to everybody coming up here next week.
Oh, yeah. Well, we won't be here for a show next week. So, yeah, happy Halloween. Witches and goblins and ghosts and happy...
Oh, my.
No bats, yeah, so am I, and happy bats and scary stuff to everybody. Yeah, and I don't know about anyone else, but we are having fabulous weather here right now for this
Same
weekend.
Here.
Are you?
Yeah.
Oh, fantastic. For this
nice
weekend.
Nice and sunny all day.
Yeah, yeah. And all of next week, it's supposed to be 60s and 70s, and that is outstanding. And I'm happy about that because I don't want to see summer end. So let's keep it as long as we can here. I'm very happy about it. So anyway, with that being said, today we're going to talk about an episode from season 5 called Number 12 Looks Just Like You. Not you, Robert, but you know, like looks like Dave.
Number 12. Hey, not everybody can look like me unless it's Halloween. Then they would look like me every year, you know? No respect. No respect.
Number 12 looks just like
you. Not even from Lynn, I get no respect.
No respect. Number 12 looks just like Dave. So, anyway, I'm going to turn it over to you, Robert, and I'm going to let you do the opening clip.
Okay.
And now, Mr. Serling. Given the chance, what young girl wouldn't happily exchange a plain face for a lovely one? What girl could refuse the opportunity to be beautiful? For want of a better estimate, let's call it the year 2000. At any rate, imagine a time in the future when science has developed the means of giving everyone the face and body he dreams of. It may not happen tomorrow, but it happens now in the Twilight Zone.
Can I have an extra piece of candy for my stupid brother? He couldn't come with us because he's sitting in a pumpkin patch, waiting for the great pumpkin. It's so embarrassing to have to ask for something extra for that blockhead Linus. I got 5 pieces of candy. I got a chocolate bar. I got a quarter. I got a rock.
Oh, yeah. It happens now in the Twilight. As a matter of fact, it happens
now. Yeah, there is
now.
Somebody that works in a restaurant looks like me, and in the gas station where I get gas looks like me, too. And then there's another one that looks... Well,
they're all number 18. Yes, your number. Oh, man. Yeah, number 12 looks... Oh, by the way, before I get started, I want to mention one thing. Bobby and I have a guest today. It's my my very best friend in the whole world. Her name's Pat, and she is sitting in listening to the show today. Pat, say hi.
Hi, everybody.
Yay.
Hi, Pat. Hi, Pat. Everybody say hi to you. Welcome to that.
Thank you for being here, Pat.
I can't do the show with an audience. I'm too shy.
Hi, welcome on today's pirate ship, Pat. Hi, we need another scurvy on the deck with us today.
Pat is here listening to the show. She's been wanting to hear.
Oh, Julie said hi, too. She's clearing the other room there. So.
Oh, yeah. Okay, cool. Julie is Robert's wife. Very, very lovely lady. Okay, so here we go. We're talking about number 12 looks just like you. So, and basically, it's a future society. And all young adults, they have to go through this process known as the transformation, and the person's body and face are changed to mimic a physically attractive design that's chosen from a small selection of numbered models. The process gives everyone a beautiful appearance. It slows the aging process, extends the person's lifespan, and it makes the recipient totally immune to any kind of disease. Wow, 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 that's awesome. And the motive of this transformation is social harmony. But we now have 18-year-old Marilyn Kuberly, and she decides she doesn't want to undergo the transformation. She sees nothing wrong with her appearance as it is. Nobody else around her can understand her decision, her mother, her best friend, her uncle. They're all confused by this decision to not go through with the transformation. They don't understand why she's not tired of the shallowness of her contemporary life. But it seems that her radical beliefs, they were fostered by her now deceased father. And he gave Marilyn books that were banned years ago, and he actually came to regret his own transformation years earlier. He committed suicide upon the loss of his identity. So when Marilyn becomes upset about the people talking about transforming her, they end up offering her glasses of instant smile. Sounds pretty cool, instant smile in the glass. But despite the continued urging from family, friends, doctors, Marilyn is adamant about not getting the operation. She insists that the leaders of the society don't care about beauty. They just want everyone to be the same. Well.
Wow. You know what? It sounds like regeneration, doesn't it, Dave? Huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Nudge, nudge. Anyway. It's you only get to choose from certain people, but it's kind of seemed like that.
Well, after being driven to tears by the fact that nobody understands how she feels, she's put through the procedure after all. And guess
Imagine
what?
That.
She is absolutely thrilled with the results.
And she looked like the pig people. Right? Okay.
Totally thrilled with the results. She now looks exactly like her best friend and probably about 10 million other women out there. And Dr. Rex, he operated on Marilyn. He comments about how some people have problems with the idea of transformation, but that improvements to the procedure now guarantee a positive result. And she comes out, and she's happy, and she likes how she looks. And the best part is that she says, "The nicest part of all, Val, is I look just like you." She looks just like her best friend, Val. And the last shots are of her admiring herself in the mirror and smiling. Oh, gosh.
What was that last line she said?
"And the nicest part of all, Val, I look just like you."
Like you.
Like you. She's so happy.
It was delayed, but it was there.
Oh, well, I'll tell you. Marilyn, she was at that perfect age with the transformation. But, you know, she's happy with the way she looks. And, you know, she really, to me, wasn't really that bad looking. Not at all. I mean, she wasn't gorgeous, but she wasn't that bad looking. She was kind of, in a way, she was kind of cute. Just wasn't stunning. So what? She likes herself, but everyone else, including her totally vain and obnoxious mother, you know, she insists that she's crazy not to get the transformation. They all try to make her feel inadequate, and they even do a brain scan on her with this plastic dollar store dish. Did you see that plastic dish? That was hysterical. Looked like something reject from a Tupperware group, you know. But, you know, what the hell? I mean, the models they showed, they reminded me of the models in the display windows in the episode The Trade-Ins. I think they used the same models. You know, remember that? The trade-ins, the old couple attempting to choose new bodies and faces. Mm-hmm. But in that episode, they wanted to transform only to eliminate the old man's severe pain, not for vanity. In this episode, everyone is forced to look alike just to fit into some sick society that believes everyone should be a ravishing beauty. What a boring world this would be if we all looked alike. I mean, everyone keeps telling Marilyn that it's optional. Nobody's forced to do it. You're kidding, right? I mean, the pressure they put on her is unbelievable, and in the end, they force her to do it anyway. They trick her in her operating room, and they just do it. They make her look like number 8 or Buddy Val. Okay, so isn't that great? A whole society of clones who have to wear name tags on their clothes to tell each other apart. Now, I do understand that she was thrilled with her new look at the end, but why wasn't she upset that this change was forced upon her through trickery? Suddenly, the individuality that meant so much to her disappeared, and it was replaced by the thrill of being a beauty. She stood in front of that mirror just loving her new self. So we have a different type of eye of the beholder here. It's not grotesque people trying to make beautiful people ugly. This episode is just about making everyone, ugly or not, you know, average, pretty, they all have to look alike. You know, and Marilyn was so steadfast in her views from the beginning, but eventually those views and her individuality were taken away from her by force. So this episode, it's based on Charles Beaumont's 1952 short story, The Beautiful People. And however, like all Beaumont-credited episodes this season, he did actually write the teleplay. This one was written by John Tomerlin. And unlike other examples of Beaumont using ghostwriters, both get screen credit here. But Colin Wilcox, I thought she did a great job in the role of Marilyn. And Richard Long, he was good in all of his multiple roles. I didn't think this was a bad episode. The ending kind of was strange, you know, that she could be, you know, so quickly not transformed, but so quickly swayed the other way from what you really believed and what you really wanted. But it's not a bad episode, and I'm going to give it a 2.5 rating.
Maybe they the transformation may not hold because we have the example with the father committing suicide. And
well, that's true.
Even at the end, she looks, you know, like everybody else. Maybe the true self inside of them.
She'll have the same fate. She'll have the same fate as her father, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. Okay, over to you.
Hello?
Why don't you want to talk to me?
Who is this?
You tell me your name, I'll tell you mine.
I don't think so.
What's that noise?
Popcorn.
You making popcorn?
Uh-huh.
I only eat popcorn at the movies.
Well, I'm getting ready to watch a video.
Really? What?
Oh, just some scary movie.
You like scary movies?
Uh-huh.
What's your favorite scary movie?
I don't know.
You have to have a favorite. What comes to mind?
Halloween. You know, the one with the guy in the white mask who walks around and stalks babysitters?
Yeah.
What's yours?
Guess.
Nightmare on Elm Street.
Is that the one where the guy had knives for fingers?
Yeah, Freddy Krueger.
Freddy, that's right. I like that movie. It was scary.
Well, the first one was, but the rest sucked.
So, you got a boyfriend?
Why, you want to ask me out on a date?
Maybe. Do you have a boyfriend?
No.
You never told me your name.
Why do you want to know my name?
Because I want to know who I'm looking at.
What did you say?
I want to know who I'm talking to.
That's not what you said.
What do you think I said? What? Hello?
Look, I gotta go.
Wait, I thought we were gonna go out.
Nah, I don't think so.
Don't hang up on me.
Well, thank you, Lynn. It very much reminds me of the reverse of Eye of the Beholder. In this story, it's conformity with society, as in an obsolete man. So, but you know how I am about kind of character building, talkative type episodes. There's not too much action in this. It's basically trying to convince this girl to look like everybody else in society. And
there was a lot of talk in this, I agree.
Yeah, I mean, it boils down to an emo teenager who buckled into peer pressure. I thought that why didn't they have an island like, well, then it would be too close to Eye of the Beholder, but I was thinking, you know, for people who wanted to stay individual. But one of the things in my reviews I brought up was an episode of Doctor Who called The Mind Robber back in, I think, 67, 68, I'm not for sure about the year. I think it was when Zoe was companion, and Jamie and Zoe was companion with the second Doctor, and they landed in a storybook land of fiction, and the guy that was running it was called the Master, and he wanted someone to take over him so he could go back to Earth, where he originally was from, I believe, and wanted to change everybody, make everybody the same, and then the Doctor replies to him, sausages. Everyone would be made like sausages, the same, but not different. So they were looking to be taken over in that. It also very much reminded me, and even though they weren't really human beings, they're actually automatons, the Star Trek episode I, Mud, where the Enterprise is diverted to, I guess, wherever Mud's planet is, and they find all these women and men. The only thing is they are automatons, but they are different models. They all have numbers on them to say there's so many of these models that are there. So let me go ahead and I'll play the trailer for that.
Captain's log, stardate 4513.3. After having been taken over by an android, we are entering orbit around a planet which has never been charted. Who sent you?
You should refer to me as Mud the First. I had 500 of them made up to attend me.
I love you. However, I hate you.
What a shame you're not real.
We are programmed to function as human females.
You are? This place is even better than Leningrad.
Scotty's dead. He had too much happiness.
The fact is, I've taken over your whole ship. There's nothing you can do about it.
Basically, in that episode, they become prisoners of these automatons, and the crew tries to emotions to try and break their hold. So, pretty good episode of Star Trek there. But as I said, very much the same to me on this. But it did have Richard Long. I like Richard Long from The Big Valley.
Yeah, I did too.
So much is. Yeah. I mean, he's a good actor. I always enjoy him. It just, like I said, just was the shame for me. The same for me. My rating is a 1 out of 5 for this. Okay. Got something special. Here he is, the Dark Sith of Talking Twilight Zone. There you are. Hi, Bobby.
Not really a bad episode by season 5 standards. Creepy more than anything as any story would be that deals with the state taking over people's lives and then dictating how they should act and think, and in this case, even look. Still, though, as Robert said in his written review at the group site, a virtual talk marathon with literally no action at all. And it makes its point about the evils of conformity in the first 10 minutes and then belabors it to death for the next 15, so not a whole lot goes on. The basic premise is all pretty obvious. If everyone is beautiful, then nobody is beautiful. How could you tell what is beautiful if there's no ugly in the world? That's all we ever do, compare one thing to another, whether it's people or television shows or eating or whatever. And just like we do here right on this show when we compare episodes. A lot of people in their reviews at our group website, including me, point out rightfully that this is the same idea from the all-time classic Eye of the Beholder episode. But truthfully, these two episodes have nothing in common. Eye is a fabulous all-time TV classic with a very science fiction feel, to say nothing of its startling visuals and surprise ending. But other than the basic theme, these two stories are in a different universe from each other, as far as quality is concerned. Obviously, having everyone look the same is a terrible idea, but there is a moment when you could almost buy into it. The young woman in question goes to see this doctor or psychiatrist or whatever he is, he's supposed to be, and he tells her that aside from looking beautiful, an extra benefit would be good health for a much longer time. Perhaps 100 years or more without your body slowly decaying. That's not a bad idea, and she even asks him why she can't have that without changing her looks. He gives her some kind of blather about how you need to do it while bodily tissues are still young. That seems unlikely to me. If the state could develop a way for everyone to look alike, then surely they could find a way to prolong life and health and still maintain a person's individuality. And why indeed mandate a thing like this and have everybody look the same? Why not just pick out people who really need it? People who are sick, people who are old, people who are disabled, people who have fatal diseases, things like that, and give them a new body. Then it would have some meaning. There is some real-life irony to this story. The lead actors, Richard Long and Susie Kendall, could have benefited from getting into different bodies. Long was well known, as Robert has already told us, for years as a TV character actor, including his long stint in the TV show The Big Valley. Unfortunately, he did not last very long. Found this information about him on the internet. Richard Long had cardiac problems throughout his adult life and had suffered a heart attack in the late 1950s. As a boy, he had suffered pneumonia, which apparently weakened his heart. He was also a heavy smoker and drinker. After suffering several heart attacks, he died on December 21st, 1974, just 4 days after his 47th birthday. and just 10 years after this episode, he surely could have used a different body. Even worse than that is interesting information about Susie Kendall. She was a very famous model during the 60s.
Bob?
She appeared on countless... Yeah, what?
Isn't it Susie Parker?
What did I say?
Yeah.
Oh, Miss Susie Kendall. Where did I get the name Kendall from?
I don't know. Miss Susie Parker.
I don't know, maybe it's an old girlfriend or something. I don't know.
Might be.
Susie Parker. I have no idea where I got the name Kendall from. Anyway, she was a very famous model during the 60s. She appeared on countless magazine covers, including Vogue. And she became a spokesperson for several cosmetic companies, most notably Revlon, for many years. She was also the first model in history to earn $200 an hour and $100,000 a year, a paltry sum by today's standards, but a princely sum back in the 60s for sure. Unfortunately, though she looked good, she had many health problems later in life. I found this about her on the internet too. A self-described tomboy in her teens, she broke several bones as a result. Parker, who also broke bones in a 1958 car accident that killed her father. Then in 1964, she was nervously rehearsing for her famous appearance in the well-known Twilight Zone episode, Number 12 Looks Just Like You, when she was in another car accident. Parker had long suffered from allergies and in the 1990s developed ulcers. During surgery for an ulcer, her vital signs disappeared on the operating table, but she was resuscitated. She never fully recovered and developed more ulcers and diabetes. She had multiple hip surgeries, and then her kidneys began to fail. She spent the last 5 years of her life in and out of the hospital. Parker decided to end dialysis treatments, and she returned home and died at age 70, surrounded by her family. That's very ironic, in the two people in a story about getting new bodies, desperately needed new bodies. Now, at our group site, one of our co-reviewers, George, wrote that he was terribly disappointed by the ending, as Lynn has already mentioned, where this young woman, after undergoing this forced transformation, seems suddenly delighted with how she looks. He questions whether she had a lobotomy, too. This is very true. It makes no sense for her to be so pleased just because she sees how she looks now. She knew from the get-go exactly what she would look like. So why does she change her mind so easily? It's good to see her fighting back against the state, but disturbing to see her cave in so easily. I suppose that along with changing your looks, maybe they changed your brain and personality, too. All in all, not a bad story, especially compared to the nutty one that is coming up next. Very creepy, especially that crazy talk about having a cup of instant smile. How bizarre is that? What is instant smile? Most people gave it an average rating of 2, and so did I. We've seen worse, and God knows we will again, just 2 weeks from today. Lynn?
Bobby, maybe it's the equivalent of Milk of Human Kindness in the Scrooge movies.
Yeah, maybe you're right. I never thought about that.
Yeah.
Instant smile sounds very bizarre. It might be good, though, if you're depressed or something. You can just have a cup of instant smile, and you feel just fabulous. Anyway, that's it for me. I'll stick with the 2.
Okay, Dave, over to you.
Well, John, it's been fun, but I gotta go. I have a date with a 6-year-old boy. And you have a date with death. So long, John.
All right, Course Series 5, Episode 137. I'm actually surprised at Bobby with that, and thank you for covering those points, one or two that I'd read a little bit about, but you illuminated those a little bit. The name Susie Kendall, by the way, there is an actress called that, the similar age.
That's right, you're right, yeah.
She was in...
To Serve With Love.
Yeah, she was in Thunderball with Sean Connery, The Penthouse, what else she was in? She was in a TV series called Persuaders with Roger Moore, Tony Curtis. Just one episode, not a regular. So you obviously took a fancy to her when she did appear that. But what I am surprised about is that you gave it a 2. I was thinking that this was be one of your one ratings, because, like you say, the one that I'd referenced to it was Eye of Beholder, and it was a pale image of Eye of Beholder, and I think you're absolutely right there. This was a little bit of a lightweight program. I didn't dislike it. It was reasonably entertaining, as Bobby said. I'm going to agree with Bobby this week. That's a good change, isn't it? It was mostly wordy. You had the feeling with all the economies that they've been doing, it was rather convenient that they had all the people looking the same. Now, let me just mention a few things. First of all, the girl playing the young Marilyn, the 18-year-old Marilyn, Colleen Wilcox, or whatever. The actress herself was 29, so I suppose they picked someone older on purpose, to give her that, she wouldn't have that fresh... Because let's face it, most 18-year-old girls just look good on the sheer fact that they've got that sort of, the glowing teenage
youth
skin,
yeah,
and health. Yeah, I mean, yeah. So they... I'm not saying that this girl looked... But they picked her playing 10 years younger than her age. So I thought that was... and also, of course, they wanted to emphasise that her mother actually looked younger than her. Although, in fact, the actress playing her mother, I think, was about age 31. One of the things that I thought about was, as I say, whether it was a cost thing that they'd done with just three actors, but... If the whole world is under this regime, maybe it's just the United States, but let's say it's the whole world. She was choosing between models 8 and 12. The highest numbered model that we heard was the guy played in various modes by Richard Long. And I think he was model 17. Now, you can argue, well, not only is it going to be bad that these people have to look alike, but you think there'd be at least, 99 models for men and 99 models for women or something. Virtually everybody you walk past on the street is going to look. No wonder they have to have their name tag, not sewn in the school clothes on the back, but their own particular name on the front. Now, to address the thing that Bobby said about and this his friend, the way that she came out, so much change. I would prefer to think, in actual fact... not only had they fooled her in the fact that she had any choice in the matter, because remember, he sedated her in the hospital, and basically the other people were basically saying, you have to join. Now, one of the things I thought about, Robert, was the Star Trek, was it Star Trek Next Generation one, where they bring a game aboard the Enterprise. Are you with me on this, Robert? Can you remember what I'm talking about? It's a little game that they play where they have to, with their mind, put a little ball into like a little funnel.
Oh, actually, Robert was muted for a second. He had to be muted for a second, yeah.
Well, let's see if he gets unmuted.
Oh, he says yes.
Oh, he's muted. Oh, he's muted at his end. Sorry, right. Okay.
Yeah,
well,
yeah, but he
all right.
said yes,
well,
he remembers.
Right. For other people listening later and for yourself, this was an episode where somebody brought on this this little game. It's like a pair of glasses that you wear with a little thing that shines into your eye, a little image. And visually in front of you, you see a virtual game where you have these like three little... cup holders, and you have to mentally make this little ball drop into them, and each time you get a little bonus in your sensory perception, a pleasure thing, a little bit like that smile thing. And the thing is that it seems very simple, and people, more and more of the crew start taking this, they replicate it, more and more have it, but they then become addicted to it. It's a very addictive thing. It's a sort of a drug, and it also means that the ship can be taken over by other people. You're getting a situation here where, with those couple of smiles, with the fact that he's drugged her, and the fact that basically they're never going to let her, refuse this treatment, I'm wondering whether she wasn't actually, that her body wasn't actually processed, as they put it. If you notice, when she actually finally walks into what seems to be the operating room, they have this sort of great big plastic Perspex thing that's coming down from the roof. I'm wondering whether they basically get plasticized or something. They're basically turned not into robots, but into very simple images of themselves. If you remember when the girl talks, she's the only one that reads books. When she's talking to her uncle, you know, he says, well, we all talk about games, the latest games and this and that. But she said, yeah, but you don't talk about things that matter. So we do know that their higher mental functions are definitely inhibited in some way. And they have these very, very shallow view of life. So I think that change at the end, although they didn't explain it, and maybe a line or two between the nurse and the doctor, you know, she walked out, would have been, you know, helpful there, you know, say, you know, because it was almost a neutering process, wasn't it, Lynn? As well as giving her this new body, she was almost neutered.
I was just thinking that when you said it, yeah.
However, not neutered in the way some people may seem, because a friend's talking to her at one point and saying, well, I don't know why you're so attached to your father. You've had 9 fathers. A mother has had 8 new husbands. Now, given the fact that this girl is 18, and given the fact that she's talking about fairly intellectual conversations with her father, I would have assumed that her father's only died, say, 5 or 6 years ago, maybe when she was 10 or 12. So let's be generous and say 8 years her father's died. In that 8 years, her mother has had 8 new husbands.
one husband every year, yeah.
Right.
One per year.
Now, if this one that we see is only model 17, it makes you think that there's not going to be 2000, you know, a model 2084, a model 4071. It makes you feel as though there's going to be a dozen models of each at the very most. Sorry, not a dozen, you know, 20 or 30 or whatever. She's going to go through all the possible permutations of good-looking fellas she can marry in 20 years of her life, and she's going to live for what?
She's been very busy.
She's supposed to be living to another 150 years in a very, very attractive model. By the way, this model, I believe, was the only model to ever have a Beatles song written about her, although it wasn't published. That was something else I read about her. So,
Is that true?
Yeah. This the Beatles wrote a song
about her. Yeah, I read that too when I was doing that research, yeah.
Yeah, let me just say then that I think the script could have done with at least another couple of read-throughs. I think it could have been a better episode if they'd just sort of done a few little bit more about that. And one thing, I don't think you mentioned it, Robert, you're back on audio now.
Yeah, I'm back on. Yeah.
When Richard Long was doing the first Doctor, he kept putting his little finger to his mouth. I thought, is he doing a mini-me? What's he called? Not mini-me, the Austin Powers thing. Did you see that? One finger.
Crowds kept with laser beams on their head.
Very Austin Powers, the way he was of his head. So,
Well, he had a dark character that was the psychiatrist, because remember, she's in the room and the lights are turned down low and all the guy needed was a flashlight when he talked to her, you know?
Yeah.
He had that evil-type presence.
So I don't think his acting was too good in some of those other parts, although I do like him as an actor. So I think that they should have thought it out a little better. It was basically a carbon copy in one sense of I Have a Beholder, but I think the carbon was a bit faded. And it was a bit of a lacklustre episode. So I think I'm probably going to give one of my lowest ratings. I think I'm going to just give it a 2.
Okay. Well,
Dave, I believe the episode you were looking for, I was busy trying to get the trailer later, and I brought it up on Wikipedia to confirm it. It's called The Game. It was the 106th episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, 6th season, episode 5. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay, well, awesome. So, okay, it looks like, Bobby, I'm sorry, what did you give it?
2.
Okay.
Me and Bobby on the same score. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, same one.
Amazing.
On this one.
Before this wraps up, I have a question. maybe I missed it. I've seen it twice this week, and maybe I missed it, but what she doesn't want to have this done. So what is the penalty? Was there a penalty? Do you go to jail,
say.
Or do they kill you, or what?
They just stroked her.
Why not just refuse to do it? Let it be at that. Why not just stick your finger up in the air and say, I'm not doing it. I don't care whether you like it or not.
I don't know. I mean, they keep saying to her, they keep telling her that no one's forced to do it. But,
well, then just don't do it. Well, then don't. Just walk out of the room and say, I don't care. I'm not doing it.
But do you also remember the thing that he said? He said to her, we just want to find out the reasons that you don't want to do it and make the necessary corrections. So that leads you to believe they did something to her brain.
They were going to do it to her anyway, whatever she decided to, if she didn't want to or not. It just seemed that the way. But they had to be careful with that, because if they start doing that, even though, Bobby, you said it wasn't like Eye of the Beholder, but it did have similarities to that, to, you know, you had a society of pig people, and then in this one you have a society of the same one, and the other one would be the offshoot. I guess they never had an island or anything that they could send them off to the side. Then it'd be too much like Eye of the Beholder. So.
I think also they were very compliant as a group, weren't they? I mean, she hadn't had the procedure done, but everybody that she was in contact around her had had it, and they were very compliant. You know, they didn't sit down until they were told to sit down. They didn't do this. They didn't, you know, when he told her, you know, he put the thing on her head, and I've just thought of another one, Robert. Tripods.
Yep.
Did you ever watch Tripods? Do I need to explain
Tripods
that?
Tripods is kind of an invasion of the body snatcher feel to that, isn't it?
Well, let me just give a very brief synopsis, since we haven't got Rick Wall in the room and he might just appear in time. This is in the stories, it's a trilogy, but in the trilogy, you see England. Because that's where it takes place. It was written by this author, Christopher somebody. I'm trying to remember his name now. But Earth has been invaded by these creatures that live inside these three-legged, like robots, giant robots. You never actually see them in the first book. But when children reach a certain age, their puberty, they are what's called capped. So they all and by the way, although it's in the future, it's about 100 years in the future, the whole country is very rural. There's no machines, there's no cars. Everything's it's like a very Amish lifestyle. So they're using wooden wagons and all sorts. And when the boys are 13, once a year, they have a fair or a gathering in each village around the country. And all the boys are all the ones that are ready to be accepted by these aliens, the tribal, to have the head shaved. And they have it shaved because this big grab comes down from they are sort of spaceships, but they walk on the planet. They're lifted up and they are what's called capped. They have this sort of like metallic thing embedded in the skull that makes them compliant and, won't rebel. Now, in this particular story, I won't tell any more of the story, but in this particular story, the three heroes that are all about to be capped decide that they will try and run away. They've heard of somewhere called the White Mountains, where there's a resistance. And the whole story is about these three boys, how they try to evade this capping procedure. Because once they're capped, you lose that rebellious streak. This woman, although she got a new body, in effect, she was also subdued as well, wasn't she? We're getting audio from Bobby there, Lynn, I think.
Oh. Bobby, are you doing something?
No, I'm not doing anything. It's the phone.
Oh.
Yeah, I think it's when you don't
talk. It's not him. It's the background from the phone. Yeah.
Watching the thing, nope.
I just saw Finn. He wasn't doing anything. I mean, he's just laying there listening, so I don't know where it's coming
from. The phone's
from.
Giving trouble.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I think there's more to that procedure. I think it could have done with a little bit more explanation of the story, and I think it could have been worked over the script a little bit more. I think maybe if I was going to be cynical, I'd say, you know, they were perhaps a little bit past caring, or perhaps, you know, this was well into the season and
they had to get this one, you know, out and up, and so they had to run with it as it was. But it definitely seems to me as an unfinished story.
Yeah, it's very similar to the invaders of the body snatchers, whereas the plants take over the people, or actually they make a copy of that person and the original person dies. So,
which makes me think that that might have been perhaps the original script had that in, and then they were worried about copyright, that it might have been
probably
similar.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, well, we have 2 2s, 1 1, and a 2.5. So actually, this is like considered basically an average story. I guess I gave it the highest with a 2.5, but still that's not great. You know, it's an average story. And we have still have some good ones, a couple of good ones left to come in season 5.
I can't wait till the next one. That's my favorite.
Oh, stop. Okay, well, the next
And as one, our special guest star we have on our next show is Offer A, DeFonzarelli. Yay! So tune in 2 weeks for that.
Okay, well, that's going to be in 2 weeks on Saturday, November 8th. And that story is, or that episode is, Black Leather Jackets. Yes, indeed. One of Bobby's absolute favorites. Okay, so that'll be it in 2 weeks, November 8th, and I hope to see you all there. I hope Rick's going to be back soon. I know he was having problems, computer problems and headphone problems, and you know, I just hope maybe he'll make it back in eventually. Has anyone heard from him?
Not recently, no. I don't think he was on trivia on Friday night. So,
yeah, he was having all kinds of computer problems, and his headphones broke down, and it's just one thing after another.
From New Jersey, too. I know he had.
I know. I emailed him a couple of weeks ago.
He was going to a convention, but I think I'm not sure whether the convention's around next weekend. He's going to Long Island Who, Robert?
Oh.
Yeah. So the one that oh, shoot, the guy from Podshop put together.
Yeah.
Not Lewis. Kent, yeah.
Now, I'm not sure that actually is the weekend of the 7th, 8th, the 8th and that. So he might not be on. He might be at Long Island Who next time.
Okay. Yeah, because I emailed him a couple of weeks ago, and he said, you know, I've been having all kinds of problems, computer problems, my headphones broke. So I knew that, you know, might not be in. But that's all right. Maybe we'll see him the week after that then, because the next episode, we don't really care that much if he's there. But maybe for the next one. All right, guys. Well,
hey, Dave, I got a surprise for you before we leave.
Okay.
Remember last week's episode of Doctor Who?
Yeah.
Let's see if I can get that to work.
Mailed in. Thank you, Bing.
Just for you, Dave.
Oh, God. All right, guys. Have a great rest of the weekend. And we'll see you in 2 weeks.
Bye.
Bye.
Yay. Bye, everybody.
Yay.
Balls all this one, my God.
Bye, everybody.
And now, Mr. Serling.
Earl Hamner Jr. brings his typewriter and his fertile mind back into the Twilight Zone next time with a program about visitors. On the surface, they're beatniks, a few raunchy-looking characters on motorcycles who draw into town one day. But once you meet them, you won't forget them. They're quite different from what they appear. On the Twilight Zone, Lee Consolving, Shelley Fabre, and Michael Forrest star in Black Leather Jackets.
Something strange. Come with us and you will see. This old tower.
I am the one hiding under your stairs, fingers like snakes and spiders in my hair.
This is Halloween, Halloween.
In this town, we call home, everyone hail to the pumpkin song.
In this town, don't we love it now, everybody's waiting for the next surprise.
Trash can, something's waiting on a punch and pound.
Hooray, this is Halloween.
Red and black.
It's bloody green.
Aren't you scared?
Well, that's just fine.
Say it once, say it twice. Take a chance and roll the dice.
Ride with the moon in the dead of night.
Everybody scream, everybody scream.
In our town of